From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The midlife crisis. Sometime in your 40s, you might start to feel down, detached, feeling like you haven't accomplished enough. New research says you are not alone. It's biological. Animals go through it, too. The good news is that the 40-something years are just a bump on the road of life. And no, you don't need to buy a sports car, take a skydiving class, or have an affair to weather them. All you need to do is look ahead to your happy 50s and 60s. This hour on Point, the truth about midlife and happiness. You can join us on air or online. Is this you, 40-something, and wondering if this is it? Feeling stuck? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first from Washington this hour, Jonathan Rauch, author of the cover story in the new issue of The Atlantic, The Real Roots of Midlife Crisis. He's also a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Jonathan Rauch, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here.
Well, you wrote about your own version of a midlife crisis. Tell us what happened.
I found myself in my 40s doing objectively great. I was thriving professionally. I had settled into finally a good relationship. I could go on, yet I felt crummy about my life, and I didn't understand why. I felt like restless, dissatisfied, stuck, as you say. I had fantasies of escape, wanting to throw it all up in the air, do things differently. I'd wake up in the morning feeling like I'd wasted my life. But the worst part of it, Jane, was understanding this was irrational and feeling there was something very wrong with me for having these feelings. I didn't know what was going on. And when I was about 50, discovered in all places economics, a literature on something called the U-shaped happiness curve, and realized it wasn't just me.
So tell us what the U-shaped curve is.
Economists have begun gathering evidence from cultures all over the world, many countries, many different questions on surveys asked over long periods of years. And when you do statistical analysis, you get something surprising, which is a tendency, not everywhere. There are lots of different patterns. Humans are complicated. But it's a tendency. It's very common to see a U-shape in which life satisfaction declines through the 20s and 30s and bottoms out sometimes in the mid, usually in the mid to late 40s, and then starts rising after that and keeps rising and rising and rising. So this became known as the U-curve. It's not universal. It doesn't happen to everyone. Your mileage may vary, but it happens enough so that it gets hard to blink away. And then other kinds of evidence began surfacing that suggest something's really going on here, like this pattern was found with chimpanzees and orangutans.
Yeah, that was interesting in your piece, that primatologists found a U-shaped curve in these chimps and orangutans in their state of mind over time, right?
Well, that's right. And if you adjust for the fact that their lifespans are shorter than ours, they bottomed out about the same time we seem to, which is in about midlife, in their mid-40s. In my case, my 50s came along. Objectively, things got worse. I hit some real turbulence in life, the death of both parents, the loss of a steady job, some other things like that. Yet I found this fog was lifting, and the best thing was that I felt my sense of gratitude and adventure coming back. And that's when I realized that, at least in my case, this large common pattern, it really applied.
So beyond the animals that you spoke about, is this a Western phenomenon per se, or do you see this globally?
No, the first thing I thought is, well, this must be just the West. It's certainly more prominent in wealthy Western nations, because people live long enough to get to the other side of the U-curve. There are some countries, for example, Russia, where you don't see a U-curve. You see a steady slope downward. People get less happy and then they die. That's the most common finding there. But you do see the U-curve in lots of unexpected countries, places like Mongolia, it turns up, Eastern Europe, Latin America. So it is definitely not just a phenomenon of, say, the United States. It's also, by the way, not particularly a male phenomenon. I expected to find, you know, the cliche is the guy who, you know, throws up his marriage, gets a trophy wife and a sports car. Well, it turns out first of all, that's a misunderstanding of what's going on. But second, it's not just men, it's women too. There's not a big gender difference at all.
So how do different variables like marital status, like income, which you've talked about a little bit, but employment and gender influence the U-curve?
The interesting thing about the U-curve, one of the most interesting things anyway, is that often it shows up after you make statistical adjustments for situational differences in life. In other words, if you take people who are otherwise the same in terms of marital status, employment, income, education, it turns out to be quite easy to adjust for those variables in these large data sets. Often the U-curve shows up after you make those adjustments. In other words, it looks like in many cases there's an other things equal underlying relationship between age itself and human happiness. And in fact, often in many cases, you know, if things are going wonderfully in your 40s and you battle cancer and depression in your 30s, your situation will mean that your particular 40s might be better. But underlying all that, after you adjust for life differences, it does appear that what's going on here may be related to age, not just life situation.
It's so interesting. Let me bring another voice into the conversation, Joshua Coleman, co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families. He's a psychologist in private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. Joshua Coleman, welcome back to On Point. So nice to have you.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Jane.
So as a psychologist, what do you make of this new research, this fresh take on the so-called midlife crisis?
I think it's fascinating. I also think it's very important and very useful for me as a psychologist in terms of the clients that I work with. I'm a big fan of normalizing problems, and I think many people come into therapy worrying that they're inherently flawed, that they're inherently different. I think in particular in our culture, which is highly individualistic and makes people feel like if they have a problem, then there's something defective about them. I think this research points to the fact that you can have a big downturn in happiness and not have it not be emblematic or symptomatic of some inherent flaw in you, but that it's just something that may be developmentally pretty normal.
And so at what age do you typically see people coming into your office talking about what's wrong with their lives, about a possible midlife, right?
Well, it's very much as Jonathan has described. It's typically in the 40s. That seems to be 40s, you know, sometimes in the early 50s, but typically somewhere in the 40s. I've seen it as young as the late 30s. And as a psychologist, of course, I have to make the distinction between is this truly a midlife crisis or is this symptomatic of something else that's more serious. So, for example, somebody might come in and say it's a midlife crisis, but they're actually suffering from a more serious depression, or their problems in their marriage are more serious than they're facing, or perhaps they've developed an anxiety disorder. They may be somebody who minimizes problems psychologically, and so they may be sort of putting it into this catch-all phrase, oh, this is just a midlife crisis, but it's actually something more serious. Mm. So part of my task as a psychologist is to help kind of ferret that out.
Jonathan Rauch, why in your research was happiness so often U-shaped? Why the common dissatisfaction in middle age? Why wasn't it earlier when things are more unsettled in younger lives?
We don't know, Jane. This is a what story at this point, more than a why story. This is evidence that falls out of these gigantic data sets. It's really a big data story. And I think the job for the next 20 or 30 years is for psychologists, people like Arthur Guest Gary, to begin to understand what's going on. We do have clues. It does seem that people's expectations for life tend to be unreasonably high early in life and settle down to something more reasonable in the course of their 40s or 50s, and that adjustment seems to be emotionally difficult. But it also seems to lead to 50s, 60s, and 70s that are surprisingly happy and optimistic. People begin to value their connections more than sort of winning the social competition. They seem to get wiser. There's now brain science on this showing that older people react less than younger people do to negative stimuli and bad feelings. They're better at regulating emotions. This is really a good news story, Jane, and it's just our other guest just said, it's really a story of people need to understand if you're feeling low in your 40s, in many cases, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. And it's not a crisis. You just get through it. it's just part of life. And it's a transition for many of us to something actually really wonderful.
So
if I can jump in here, Jane.
I think that
when one is young, there's kind of the promise and there's the possibility. And there's a lot of excitement that goes with that, kind of beginning to acquire status or master problems. And there's the promise of being even bigger and better. But typically, by the time you're 40, you've either achieved what you've set out to achieve or you haven't achieved and you've actually begun to face and accept your limitations, whether those are personal limitations or the person that you're married to or some other kind of limitation. You may have children that have posed problems for you or limitations on what you can possibly achieve. And I think that you begin to face that things are not going to be as you hoped that they would be. And so those who are better able to kind of successfully move into their 50s and 60s, and it's certainly not everybody, are those who over time can develop some serenity and acceptance of that. Those who go kicking and screaming into their 50s, 60s, and 70s won't. They will be chronically depressed and unhappy, and in some cases
better. So if you talk about this U-curve, the life satisfaction declining, bottoming out sort of in your mid-40s, at what point does it level off? Ill health starts to set in when you get a little older. Is there an age? What does the research say, Jonathan Rauch?
The research doesn't say much about the very end of life because the data get really, really noisy. When you start getting into people's 80s, a lot of the samples in these big data sets have died off. Happier people do tend to live longer, and you also get disease, cancer, all that sort of thing. So we don't know that much about the very, very end.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're discussing the scientific roots of the midlife crisis this hour, and you can join the conversation. What does being 40-something mean to you? Have you reached your career goals, your personal goals? Do you feel your best years are behind you or yet to come? Here's some sound, a scene from 1999's American Beauty about a character named Lester, played by Kevin Spacey, a middle-aged man having a midlife crisis. He's having a conversation with his wife, Carolyn, played by Annette Bening.
Whose car is that out front?
Mine. 1970 Pontiac Firebird, the car I've always wanted, and now I have it. I rule.
Uh-huh, where's the Camry?
I traded it in.
Shouldn't you have consulted me first?
Let me think. No, you never drove it.
And here's a scene from 2012's This Is 40, where 40-year-old Debbie, played by Leslie Mann, gives a pep talk to her husband Pete, played by Paul Rudd, on how they are going to have a happy life in their 40s.
We have everything we need right now to be completely happy. We're going to blink and be 90.
What?
So let's just choose to be happy.
Yeah.
So we have to exercise every day, spend more time alone together, and we have to go to the therapist every week. No stressing over tiny things.
Yeah, that's good. You should do that.
Mm-hmm. We have to get more involved in school, have more patience with the kids, and we need to work on our anger. And then no more holding on to resentments. We have to just let that go.
Yeah, it's that easy. We're talking with Jonathan Rauch, author of the cover story in the new issue of The Atlantic, The Real Roots of Midlife Crisis, and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and Joshua Coleman, co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families, and a psychologist in private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. Let me ask you both about the expectations gap. Specifically, Jonathan, what your research showed in your article, the fact that younger people consistently and markedly overestimate how satisfied they would be 5 years later from that point, while older people underestimate future satisfaction. I found that interesting.
Yeah, it sure is. This is brand new research done by Hannes Schwandt, who's a young German economist. Isn't it interesting that all this is coming out of economics, of all places? And he looked at a data set in Germany covering both Eastern and Western Germany, which followed people over time. And it asked them both how satisfied they are with their life today and how satisfied they expected to be 5 years from now. And of course, if you follow that over time, you can match up how people feel the future when they get there actually matches up. Well, it turns out that young people are very optimistic about the future, but they expect things to get better. And then they get to the future and things are not as much better as they expected. They hit this U-curve, life satisfaction begins to decline. And so they hit a point where their expectations for the future are dropping because they're getting older and they think the future will be worse. And they're not as happy themselves as they were the year before. So basically, they're disappointed and pessimistic in middle age, which is really a recipe for misery. Yeah, it's a recipe for misery. But then these lines begin to cross. Sometime in the early 50s, people's expectations for the future get much more realistic and reasonable. They're not expecting as much. And because they're coming out of this U-shaped curve, they're surprised to find that they're feeling better. So suddenly they enter this period of life where they're feeling better about things and they're more optimistic about the future because their expectations aren't as high. So you seem to what seems to happen here is we go through this period of adjusting expectations and it's really quite wrenching. But when you come out the other side, you're better positioned to be able to sort of live for the moment, enjoy where you are in life, and not worry so much about where you are compared to where you maybe should have been.
Joshua Coleman, a psychologist, would you say youth then is a period of sort of perpetual disappointment and older adulthood is a period of pleasant surprise? Is that how you might put it?
Well, there's something like that, that we're more disappointed when we're young in part because of the social comparison that's ongoing. We're constantly looking at how we're doing with our peers in comparison to our peers, and that's why, you know, there's the research about you're much better off being a big fish in a small pond than a little fish in a big pond. And when you're growing up, particularly in wealthier countries, you're surrounded by – there's this enormous pond of highly successful, wealthy people. And working as a psychologist in the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm, you know, often working with people who were multimillionaires, and they're unhappy because they're comparing themselves to billionaires. So one can always be even happier and more successful, and that actually doesn't generate happiness. That generates unhappiness. So it really isn't until we get older and there's a kind of a limit, there's a social constraint on our desire that actually we begin to be happier, as I think Jonathan so ably points out in his article, that death and aging in some ways causes us to be more serene and accepting of what our limitations are and become much more focused on the day-to-day. And secondly, there's some interesting research independent of this that says that in general, modest expectations in life is a much better predictor of happiness than super ambitious expectations. There's research about this in marriage, for example. Those people who enter marriage with very modest expectations about what marriage will provide, as opposed to those who enter it thinking that it's going to be a platform for personal growth and conquering the world, are far less likely to be divorced 5 years later than those who enter marriage thinking it's going to be this central wellspring of happiness.
So I see. So more broadly speaking then, if you set goals for yourself of, say, experience and growth rather than achievement or material gain or fame and so on, the less likely you are to experience unhappiness or that midlife slump that we're talking about.
It seems to be what the research shows, yes.
Let's go to a call. Bill in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I went through a midlife crisis at age 40, and my wife did also, and she was 39. We were, so technically it was like the same age because we went through it together. Mm-hmm. And she wound up committing suicide. And I almost did, but I got through it.
I'm so sorry.
And I think that it's physiological, not psychological. And I think your guest is a psychologist, you said?
Yes.
And only psychiatrists, as I understand it, go through medical school. So they might be more attuned to it being physiological than psychological. But I don't think psychological can help midlife crisis. In my wife's case, her psychologist robbed her of her self-dignity.
Bill, I'm going to cut you off. Sounds like we have a little bit of a connection issue there. I'm glad you called, and I'm very sorry for your wife, and please take care. Joshua Coleman, would you respond to that, the physiological?
Well, I'm also really sorry what happened to your wife, Bill, and it sounds like she was undertreated. And typically, if people kill themselves, they're not suffering from midlife crisis. They're suffering from acute depression. So it sounds like you're right that she was undertreated, that that typically if somebody's that depressed that they're suicidal, they need to be on meds or perhaps even electroshock therapy. You know, in addition to therapy, you know, the research shows that a combination of cognitive behavioral therapy and some forms of talk therapy in combination with medication is the best, most effective treatment for depression. So what your wife suffered from was not a midlife crisis.
And there's a big difference. Joining the conversation now, Leslie Jane Seymour. She's editor-in-chief of the women's magazine More. Leslie Jane Seymour, welcome to On Point. So nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. Tell us what you make of this new look at midlife crisis.
Well, I think what's so interesting is you've just given a reason for More magazine existing that actually has a biological basis. I'm, like, thrilled because More has always been about looking at the second half of life and saying there are no limitations. This can be your starting point. One of the big quotes that comes from readers over time, I've been doing the magazine for 7 years, is saying, how come when everybody else feels like they're winding down, I feel like I'm just starting to take off? And maybe it's a magazine for those in denial psychologically, or maybe it's a magazine for people who are really late bloomers. But it's I almost feel like, gosh, I wish we had a men's More. Because we talk about the second half of life being the moment where you can get out of the cocoon and become the butterfly you always wanted to be. You can change your life. It's never too late. You've got another, you know, big, huge chunk. And it's all about inspiration. And maybe that's why we have this really strong following.
Jonathan Rausch, what do you make of women and the midlife crisis? Is there evidence that you see and in your research that women, as they get older, especially get happier?
I expected to find gender differences, Jane, and did not. The phenomenon appears to be cross-gender. I think its expression may be somewhat different in men because, or at least has been in the past, because at least in the past, men tended to be more career-oriented, so a disruption might be more obvious. But in terms of what's going on inside people's heads or inside the statistical data, no, men and women look very much the same. They both tend to show this curve and this sort of slump in midlife and the steady rise thereafter.
Hmm. Leslie Jane, go ahead.
Yeah, we have actually done several stories about it and polled our readers. One was a Wisdom Project where we, in November of 2012, where we talked to 1,200 of our readers, 60 plus, and 81% said that their happiest decade was after 40. And then we did another story, a follow-up in May 2013, where we had them rate on a scale of 1 to 10 how happy they felt. Under 40s was 6.1, 40s 6.5, 50s 6.9, 60s 7.7. So there you go. It exactly fits that you. It's fascinating.
Here's Michelle in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Michelle. Glad you called. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention, I'm really finding this conversation very fascinating. I'm a therapist here in Bloomington, and I myself had a midlife crisis about 2 years ago. I'm 42, I think. I have to do the math each time, but I have depression, and I had a major depressive episode, but it came along with a divorce and, you know, different environmental things happening at the same time. But I actually, that is, propelled me into having to make some decisions about what I wanted the quality of my life to be from here on out. And so it ended up kind of being a catalyst, even though it was an incredibly hard time and I'm still kind of recovering from it. I just found it to be kind of a catalyst to kind of revamp my life.
Using it to your benefit. Michelle, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Joshua Coleman, is it a catalyst? I mean, and what is the process of getting out of the rut if you're in this, at the bottom of the U-shaped curve, you know, bottoms out, mid-40s? How do you make your way out? You just have to go through
it. It's an important question. I think, you know, the first thing is to make sure that what you're experiencing actually is a midlife crisis and not something else that really needs attending to. The second is to, if you're fairly convinced that it is a midlife crisis, to not act out in ways that you're going to later regret. It's not uncommon that because when people are in the throes of the midlife crisis, a lot of people don't understand it. They feel panicky. They feel scared. They feel ashamed. So they're much more likely to have affairs. My experience as a couples therapist is they're much more likely to leave potentially good marriages, maybe in some cases stay in potentially destructive marriages, spend money that they don't have as a way to cheer themselves up. So in many ways, you want to make sure that you're not going to create more problems in the future as you do begin to pull out of it. Social theorist Barry Schwartz, who wrote the book Paradox of Choice, talks about the difference between being a satisficer and a maximizer. Satisficers are those who are kind of, you know, okay with more limited, modest gains or decisions. Maximizers feel like they always have to have the best of everything. And if there is a best of something, that's very important. Finally, and this is a point that Jonathan raised, which I think is hugely important, is really, you know, Western psychology is currently in the past decade undergoing this enormous infusion of influence from the East in terms of mindfulness, the importance of mindfulness. And there's now an enormous body of research that shows that mindfulness meditation, daily practice of that is very good for just the kind of things that people experience in the midlife crisis, which is a sense of loss of meaning, a feeling of dislocation, anxiety, and that feelings of gratitude and compassion are things that we can actually develop. And those are some of the psychological traits that do seem to come much more naturally as we get older. But they're things that we can develop at any age and should always be working towards.
Jonathan, you do talk about that. You also quote German neuroscientists about the importance of minimizing regret, not looking back in anger, I think you wrote. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, this was brain research that actually looked at how older people and younger people respond to situations where something happened that, you know, was disappointing. And they discovered that the brains of these two different sets actually responded differently, that the older people were consistently less regretful about bad things that happened that they couldn't change. Now, what's interesting about this work is this is fMRI research where you're actually doing live brain scans on real individuals. So you're looking inside the mind. This is really hardcore science. And what you do find is differences in the way older people compared to younger people process emotions like regret, negativity, volatility. It appears that as we get older, our minds, on average, change in ways that may make it easier to be stable and calm and wise, make more balanced decisions. The most interesting aspects of the research I did was discovering that there's now an emerging psychiatry of wisdom. People think that wisdom is a medical trait, not just folklore, and that you can actually test for it, and that it probably becomes easier to be wise in older age as a result of some of these other changes. That's not only good for individuals, if you're wise. It turns out it's also very good for communities and societies, if wise people are among them. And to me, this is one of the most heartening aspects of this. I think the midlife slump, much better word than crisis, by the way, is in some sense a way station for many people on the road to greater wisdom.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the science behind midlife dissatisfaction and why we get happier physiologically after 50. Here's a scene from the 2009 Up in the Air movie where 23-year-old Natalie, played by Anna Kendrick, talks about her life plans after her boyfriend breaks up with her, with two older acquaintances, Ryan, played by George Clooney, and Alex, played by Vera Farmiga.
When I was 16, I thought by 23, I'd be married, maybe have a kid, corner office by day, entertaining at night. I was supposed to be driving a Grand Cherokee by now.
Yeah, life can underwhelm you that way.
I mean, where did you think you'd be by,
It doesn't work that way.
Well, at a certain point, you stop with the deadlines.
It can be a little counterproductive.
I don't want to say anything that's anti-feminist. I really appreciate everything that your generation did for me.
It was our pleasure.
Well done.
But sometimes it feels like no matter how much success I have, it's not going to matter until I find the right guy.
You can join the conversation, listeners. Do you think there is a connection between aging and happiness? Do you think midlife crisis is just a bad excuse, another excuse for bad behavior? We're speaking with this hour with Jonathan Rauch, author of the cover story in the new issue of The Atlantic, The Real Roots of Midlife Crisis, and Joshua Coleman, a psychologist in private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. Also with Leslie Jane Seymour. She's editor-in-chief of the women's magazine More. Let's go to the phone. So many calls. Michael's in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Michael. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane, and guest. I'm pretty young. I haven't really come anywhere close to experiencing midlife crisis, but at the same time, I did live through I think what I perceived to be a midlife crisis with a close family friend of ours. He was a very successful fellow, and he was at a time, had a wife, two beautiful children, and he literally, just quit his job and said, I'm starting over. And it was kind of bizarre to us to sit and watch. And I remember sitting with this guy one time, and he told me, he said, if you want to be happy in life, he says, don't go for the money. Don't work your entire life to make money, to consume, to gain material, in search of material gains, because you won't find true happiness. And at the same time, I remember reading, I found a quote by Albert Einstein, actually, that said, to live a life of happiness, don't tie your life to goals. Tie it to goals, not to people and things. So I just wanted to kind of, put that out there, maybe get some feedback from your guest there, as to how maybe, you're living your life and your what goals you set for yourself, whether they be, just material gains, which, once you achieve those, they don't seem to that happiness, it doesn't last for very long. So
love your story, Michael. Thank you so much for calling. Jonathan Rauch.
Well, I don't really have a toolbox of one-size-fits-all tools for how people should live their lives. And in fact, what's interesting about the story of the U-shaped life satisfaction curve is it's in many ways it's often independent of life choices. It emerges when you correct for all that is something that's going on as a result of age. So what I'm doing is kind of a slightly different message. It says whatever your goals may be, whether they're material or relationship oriented or status oriented or whatever, just be prepared that you may face a kind of slump, a kind of downturn in your 40s and on into your early 50s, and that the real mistake comes in many cases when people misattribute this. They think, well, I've got to change up my life. Something is wrong with me. Something is wrong with my life. And the better advice often is just, no, it's not. You're fine. This is completely normal. Sit tight and get through it. One reason I don't like the term midlife crisis and argue in my article for reconceiving all that is for most people, most of the time, this is not a crisis. This is just something we get through, actually, quietly. And we need more social support than that. So instead of telling stories about people making crazy irresponsible decisions as a result of midlife crisis, we should be telling stories about, hey, be prepared. You may feel a little low, a little dissatisfied in your 40s and 50s. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with you.
Here's Bill in Nashville, Tennessee. Bill, welcome to the program. Josh, we'll get to you in just a second. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was curious. I haven't read the article, and I'm going to go quickly and read that article. But I'm curious in terms of the research and whether or not folks that are self-identified as particularly religious or even spiritual, is there any research that shows that they are any less likely to experience midlife crisis?
A couple of comments on the website about that, Bill. Thank you. Ed says there's only one thing that keeps a person young, and that's prayer. Jonathan Rauch, Joshua Coleman, would you respond?
Well, I'm not super familiar with that research. I mean, I know that there's a good body of research that shows that meditation is useful, and that's because a lot of what meditation counsels is a kind of, particularly mindfulness meditation, is a kind of acceptance of what is. And this is very much similar to what cognitive behavioral therapists, the model that they work with is on tolerating anxiety and actually going towards your and anxieties. There was an interesting study at Stanford where they had two different groups of people immerse their arms in freezing cold water, one of which they told to actually go into the feelings, the other which they told to block them out. And those who actually were told to go into the feelings and accept the feelings felt less pain and could hold their arms in the cold, freezing cold water longer. So I think there's a lot of wisdom, in what Jonathan was saying earlier about really just sort of accepting that you may well enter a period of life where you feel this sense of dissatisfaction and even dislocation. And it may just be a normal part of transitioning and not to panic about it. I mean, when I work with couples, I often say that you will face some period in your marriage where you will know that you married the wrong person and should have married somebody else and that you'd be much happier with a different person. And you may well be wrong about that. It may just be part of this phenomenon that we're talking about today.
What about the caller's question, Jonathan Rauch, the connection between religion and faith and age and happiness?
I haven't seen anything specifically on religion and happiness. It's not what I looked at. I did see something going the other direction causally, which is interesting, which is that as people get older, there's some medical evidence that they become more reactive to spiritual things. The spiritual parts of the mind come to the fore more. They're better at that kind of stuff. So it may be that spirituality is also something that is enhanced as we get older.
Also, you say in your article that empathy increases, long-term decision-making improves. Is that right, Jonathan?
Yeah, not in every case, but there is evidence that many of these components of wisdom may become easier to achieve as we get older and get through this period of turbulence in midlife.
Leslie Jane Seymour, what do you hear from your readers at Moore Magazine about midlife slump and reinventing yourself after it?
Yeah, I mean, that is our big thing. I mean, it doesn't mean running away and, with another guy and leaving your family, though sometimes it does happen. But basically, we counsel, don't just hang in there. You have another opportunity to go back to school, change jobs. It might be as small as changing your haircut, transforming your body, meditation and looking inside, starting a new business, leaving corporate life. You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but at least we find, and we really reflect real stories of what women have done, and show other women that you can change things up, and it is very satisfying. And most of our women are very happy that they did that.
But are women, Leslie, as primary caregivers of small children, aging adults, parents, are they under different stresses? I mean, do you hear that from quite obviously.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And that makes a huge difference.
Unfortunately, yes. And, when we start talking to readers, we go from 30, 40 to 50. And we start talking to readers in that very tough time in your 30s when your career is hitting and you have little children. And, we're not quite at that point yet where men have kicked in and are doing 50-50. So the women are, I think the next generation will be there, but the women are still, handling most of it. And there are points, and I will speak as a mother of two children who had to go through that, where you literally think the only way that you're going to get through this is to rip your clothes off and run down the street screaming. And that does create all kinds of issues, but you don't have to throw the baby out. There are all kinds of things that you can do to make yourself happier and feel reinvented. And women, maybe men don't do that. Maybe men can't just say, okay, I mean, they don't. They can't go get a new haircut and get a new hair color. Women are very good, I think, at finding those little psychological ways to make themselves happy. I mean, that's what the lipstick industry is all about, right? $15, it's better than $150 for therapy for many women.
Let's go to Miami, Florida. Roxanne is on the line. Hi, Roxanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment. I'm a 52-year-old woman. And I got to say, for me, it wasn't a crisis. To me, it was more of a transition. And it was almost like an unveiling. Like, wow, this is what life is all about. I remember sitting with a friend saying, I just don't want anything. And they were like, well, you must be depressed. And I'm like, no, I'm not depressed. I'm just completely satisfied. And I don't know if that's being in denial or not, but I found growing older was almost like growing up in a way where I'm just completely satisfied. And I find that when I was younger, I found it most in my taste in books. When I was younger, I was like in the kundera, so yeah, and searching and looking and whatever. And as I got older, I realized, wow, I love that junior book that just came out, and Harry Potter I adore. So it's kind of like, it's almost like, it's not a crisis at all for me. For me, it wasn't a crisis whatsoever.
You feel settled. Yeah, I got it.
I feel transitioned. I feel in peace. I mean, obviously, my vanity probably hit a little bit.
I'll have what she's having. Roxanne, thank you so much. Jonathan Rauch, talk about the economics of happiness a little more, and specifically the Easterlin paradox, as you write about in your article.
One of the things that got economists started on exploring happiness and well-being, which is, you know, outside the ambit of conventional economics, it tends to look at, you know, economies and money and so on, was the discovery that beyond a certain point, more money, as in fact Dr. Coleman alluded to, more money doesn't make you happy. You do need a certain amount to get to a certain level. And this finding led a lot of economists to think, well, then what does make people happier? You get some very surprising paradoxical findings. Again, this goes with something Dr. Coleman referred to earlier, but you find in a lot of developing countries, if you compare sort of economically and socially static peasants with fast-rising, ambitious middle-class people who are getting richer much faster, the unhappy people are the ones who are getting rich faster because their expectations are outracing reality. So economists find that actually the relationship between money and well-being turns out to be very complicated, and that's what's actually led ultimately to this finding about the U-curve.
Here's Dana in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Dana. Glad you waited. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I just wanted to give you a quick experience of mine. When I turned 40, I quit my job, sold basically everything, and I moved to Africa for 6 months to really reanalyze who I was and what I wanted out of the next portion of my life. And when I came back, I have to say the last 13 years have been the best of my life.
Hmm. What happened to you? What changed, Dana, in those 6 months in Africa?
Well, I had no influences, no outside influences to tell me I was doing the right thing or the wrong thing. I really got to sit down with myself and just analyze my life without any influences in one of the most beautiful places in the world, I might add.
Hmm. Glad you called. Thanks for the story. Here's Carol in Franklin, Massachusetts. Carol, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in my 70s now and just wanted to disagree a little bit with the observation that that it is the same for men and women. And this is what you've been hearing from some of your callers recently. My experience is that especially for women who have been in more traditional roles and have been raising children and doing housework and taking care of a family, there is so much circularity in what it is we do. And it is also tied in with our menstrual cycles. And as we approach menopause, we no longer have to face all of that circularity. And it seems to me that there is such a release of energy for women as they reach their 40s and early 50s and are no longer tied to that circularity. Mm. And it's almost like there's a spiral, you know, that keeps going faster and faster for us.
Back to the biology and the physiology of all this. Carol, thank you. Thanks very much. Jonathan Rauch, such an interesting article in The Atlantic. Give us the big takeaway. What do you want people to remember and know about this U-curve that you write about and the studies that you've researched?
If you're feeling low in your 40s or 50s, maybe you do need to get psychological help. I considered it. I did not. So there may be things going on, but don't panic. Don't do anything rash. In most cases, in many cases, this is a perfectly natural transition in life, and it gets better.
Dr. Coleman, your final word here.
Well, similarly, that I think that if you're really confused and upset, you probably should meet with a qualified professional just to make sure that what you're experiencing isn't the midlife slump. But if in fact it is, to really look at your expectations and to begin maybe to look more inward towards experiencing and relationships and a focus more on gratitude and less on material goods and the like.
Well, Jonathan Rauch, author of the cover story in the new issue of The Atlantic, The Real Roots of Midlife Crisis, thank you very much for bringing us all together today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.
Joshua Coleman, co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families, a psychologist in private practice in San Francisco. Thanks to you as well, Joshua.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And Leslie Jane Seymour, great to have you, editor-in-chief of More Magazine. Thanks so much.
Great. Thank you.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thank you as well, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.